Good morning. Good to be with you again. I've been here enough to recognize a few faces, especially our old neighbors, Dan and Denise. For those who don't know, we were neighbors for 15 years, since 2006. We moved in within a couple months of each other, maybe, and awkward to have pastors across the street from each other, and got to watch the kids grow up. My wife and I went to introduce ourselves to Dan and Denise, and knocked on the door. They opened the door, and he said, "Are you the pastor in the neighborhood?" Which was a little weird, because I'm like, how does this guy even know this, right? But apparently the builder connected that Dan was a pastor, so told him about the pastor. At one time, we had three pastors living within just a few houses there, which was really a little weird and scary at the same time, having us all in the same area. But it is good to be here, and I work with a ministry called Clarity of Central Indiana now, where we provide resources for women to provide them the option of life for their unborn children today. And so just thrilled to be able to be here to share with you as well, and thank you for the music and for inviting me to be a part of it. We have a little dog named Bella, and Bella is a 12-pound snoodle. I'm not sure what a snoodle is. It's something between a snoo and a doodle. It's like some kind of a noodle mixed into something. But she's actually quite nice, a wonderful little dog. And we have this kind of an unspoken rule in our house that our pets don't get fed from our table. I don't know if anybody else has anything like that, but we don't feed them from our table. My wife, Joyce, she's got her own bowl set out for her that is hers, and she's got one for me. Mine gets to be on the table, unlike Bella's. Bella's is off the table, but she has her own bowl, and we don't feed her from the table. But if any of you have dogs, you know that when you go to eat, where is your dog usually at? Under that table, right? Bella sets her under the table, and our other pets have done the same thing. They sit under that table, and they just stare fixated on the floor, just waiting for that one crumb, right? I mean, they are there no matter what. You know, we don't feed them from the table, and that's what's really crazy to me is we don't feed them from the table. They can sit there for meal after meal after meal, week after week after week after month, and never get a crumb, but when that one crumb comes, they're going to be there for it, aren't they? Because they're after that crumb. And you know, it's just amazing to me how they wait there under that table. Now, if you asked me, if I asked you if you were a crumb chaser like our little Bella and those of you who have other similar creatures in your home, if you were a crumb chaser, if I asked you that, you would say, "Well, no, I'm not a crumb chaser." I would say the same thing until you see me with a package of Lay's potato chips and nobody's watching and I'm down to the very bottom, right? I mean, you know how it is. You got to get that last thing. Anybody else ever had that thing tipped up to your mouth before? Yeah, right? Just trying to get that last thing out of there. Or a pan of brownies. You know, you've just got that one little piece in there. You got to grab that. You can't let it go by, right? So the truth is, whether we know it or not, we do have a little crumb chasing in most of us. And sometimes we'll chase crumbs, though, in life, and they can be a variety of things that we come into it in the right circumstances. Really, in a lot of circumstances, actually. You know, those are those crumbs I wish somebody liked me. I wished I had more. I wished I had more approval in my life, or I had a different status in my life, or I wished I had a little more income, or I wished I had a nicer car, and I wished I had. And it's all those crumbs that we chase after. We spend a lot of time chasing those crumbs, don't we? Really a lot of time. And then there's those times that we just really long for a crumb. For something that we really need, that is far beyond just somebody liking us. It's when that news comes of in our life that isn't good, that loss of a loved one, that loss of a marriage, that loss of a job, the loss of a dream. So many things that are there. That loss of the ability to pay the rent or the mortgage anymore. Or perhaps it's something even more significant. And if you can imagine, there could be something more significant. The loss of a child being a part of God anymore, and that Satan now owns. I mean, what do you do when you're long for just a crumb of mercy in life? Matthew 5, I'm a fan of Jesus' events in his life. I'm a fan of Jesus in general, but the events in his life in the Bible are just amazing to me because they're so rich. And in Matthew 15, we read a passage about an event of Jesus' life that is just such an amazing as all of them are. And starting in verse 21, I want to read Matthew 15, 21 in the New Testament for you and hope that you'll follow along either on the screen or in your Bible or electronic device. And we read these words. It says, "Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, 'Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly.' Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, 'Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us.' He answered, 'I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel.' The woman came and knelt before him. 'Lord, help me,' she said. He replied, 'It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs.' 'Yes, it is, Lord. For even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table.' Then Jesus said to her, 'Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted.' And her daughter was healed that moment." So Jesus and his disciples are walking along together, planning a getaway. And I don't know if you're like me, but anytime you plan a getaway, very often it's hard to actually get away, right? It's just a challenge with all the activities of life and things going. My wife and I are flying out this Thursday for the first vacation since pre-COVID. So that's been some years for us now. And she's already cautioning me about the getaway because in my role and responsibility, getaway doesn't come very easy. It seems like there's always a text, an email, a phone call coming, right? But she's kind of telling me that that shouldn't happen while I'm gone. And so getaway is a little hard to get away from at times. And this woman from the Canaanite region comes along during their getaway. And being a Canaanite means she isn't Jewish. Now, Jesus is a Jewish individual by human race. And Jews don't associate with Canaanites. And really, we seldom realize that racism in the day was abundant. I mean, it was flagrant and abundant, even more than today very often. Even in the Jewish area, God's people that had developed significant issues of racism between them and others that weren't Jewish. And so here comes this broken and crying out woman that just comes and says, "Lord, Son of David." And so this woman is just without worldly hope. She doesn't know what else to do, but somewhere in her life, even though this is a Canaanite region, a non-Jewish region, she's come to know about God somehow. And along the way, she's come to believe in God and even know of the God of Israel some way, to the degree in which she calls Jesus a Son of David. So she knows something of David, the history of the Israelite people. She has some connection there. And sometimes, you know, desperation has a way of us opening up and seeking out God when we normally don't seem to have as much of a need for him in life. And she says, "Have mercy on me." And the tense of the phrase and in the Greek, as well as the disciples give us a hint of when they come and say to Jesus, she keeps crying out after us. It tells us that this isn't like she just makes a statement and leaves it at that. I mean, she's over and over, she's crying this out, "Lord, have mercy on me. Son of David, have mercy on me." And those of you who've had a child that's walked away from God or walked away from your home or walked away from being what you had hoped for them to be and gone down a path that's just broken your heart, you know how challenging it can be to have children that you just hurt for, and you just wish that God would pour mercy into their lives. And some of you have experienced it. You know, a daughter comes in, or a child of son comes in late from curfew, and they look like maybe they've been using something that doesn't normally go into the body. And they maybe come home from school, a daughter with that boyfriend or son with that girlfriend that you, your first antenna goes up, that I don't know that I approve of this, and you wonder where it will end up at. But you see, this woman, this isn't a missed curfew that she's experiencing in her life. Or a boyfriend that you don't like. This woman's daughter, it says, is possessed by a demon. In the Greek, the King James translates this as little girl, to tell us that this is just a child, just a little girl. You know, and so many struggle to believe in Satan today. This woman has no doubt. I mean, she lives with him, a demon within her child. Now, if you've had a two-year-old, you've wondered about them before, I know. I understand, but this is real and intangible, and she's desperate. And when you're desperate, you'll try a lot of things. And she came to the one and only Son of God, and she cries out over and over and over, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me, have mercy on me, have mercy on me. And in the pit of life, sometimes it's all we can do, isn't it? Some of you have been there, some of you may be there now. One of the challenges of the church that's really unique is we can be there and nobody actually knows we're there. I don't think that's ever the way that God intended his church to be. I don't know why we're that way, but maybe it's fear that people will think we're not the spiritual giants that we're supposed to be, as if for some reason God told us to ever act like we never needed anybody else. But we miss that we do. So Jesus comes to this area to get away from the crowds, and he just had an encounter with the religious leaders. And that encounter was about who's clean and unclean, who can come to God and who can't come to God. And he goes to this area where there are no religious leaders. Sometimes it's nice to get away from all of the religion, isn't it, to just get back to God. And in an area where there's no one to argue about him, with him, about who deserves mercy. In the older part of the New Testament, around where Joshua is conquering Israel, in the book of Joshua, Tyre and Sidon is an area that's been given to God's people. In other words, God laid out in that here to Israel, when you conquer the promised land, here's the areas, and you know, here's how it all works out. And he'd given them this area of Tyre and Sidon, but oddly enough, this is an area that God's people had never been able to subdue. They'd never been able to conquer. It's almost as if Satan had put had boarded up the doors and the windows of Tyre and Sidon and put a sign out that said, no trespassing here for God's people. And they just could never seem to conquer this place. And so we come to Jesus all these years later, and there's a difference here. He's not just one of God's people, is he? He's God. This is a place where God's people cannot gain victory. But God has now come. And this woman comes to Jesus, and he doesn't answer a word. He doesn't say a word. Just keeps quiet. And you come to God. Have you ever been there? You come to God, and all you hear is silence. And you ever wonder why he's not answering you? And you feel like, God, can you even hear me anymore? Are you even listening? You know, in home, alone, at night, in the darkness, or in the motel room, or the office, or the hospital, or in the living room with a broken family, and you wonder. You wait, and you wait, and wait for God's answer, and sometimes things just seem to get worse instead of better, don't they? And you're desperate. No matter how hard you try, you just can't seem to get an answer from God or victory. Psalms 13 of the Bible, chapter 13, verse 1, we read this from David. It says, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" And David, here's David, the man who God says is a man after his own heart. David says, God, where in the world are you? Where'd you go? But sometimes it seems like, sometimes God has to be silent before I'm ready to listen. Have you ever realized that? David didn't give up, and at the end of the psalm, he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. Even though I don't hear you anymore, God, I'm going to trust even when you're silent. And that's hard to do, and this woman is in such deep need in her life, and Jesus doesn't answer a word, and few things are as hard as when you're in the pit of life, and in silence is what you get from God, and it you think it can't get any worse. And then it does. That's always one of the challenges of life. When Jesus doesn't answer, his wonderful, encouraging, godly followers come to him. They come to him and they say, send her away. She is driving us nuts. I mean, can you imagine this woman, Jesus? You've got to get rid of her. She just won't quit. Oh, my. There's racism, there's a callousness, there's just a total failure on their part to even hear the situation the woman is going through in her life, or much less care about it. It's just amazing how cold they must have been. And it makes me realize that sometimes God, when he's silent and he waits, it's not because of something you're doing wrong, but because of something he knows that others have wrong. Sometimes God waits to answer our lives because of the lessons that others need to learn. And sometimes we learn lessons along the way with that. In other words, very often some of the challenges we experience in our lives aren't actually about us. We're just caught in the midst of life. And when the disciples tell Jesus to send her away, it says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel, Jesus says. Now, our automatic thought is that we feel like he's saying that to this woman. I was sent only to lost, but he's not. It says he answered them, so he's talking to his disciples. I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Now, I have to get this and think about this, that he's kind of making a rhetorical statement here. He's kind of indicating that it's sort of like when a child comes and says, Mom, Dad, you need to sell my little brother. And you say, I need to sell your little brother, huh? You know, it's rhetorical. It's not, he's reiterating what they've just said. Send her away. Oh, so I'm only here for the lost sheep of Israel. That's what you're saying, isn't it? Because that is what they're saying. Jesus, send her away. Oh, really? That's what you want me to do. That's who you are. See, just before this, Jesus has rebuked the religious leaders for them trying to tell him who's clean and unclean, who's can come and who can't come, who he can touch and who he can't touch, who can have mercy and who can't have mercy. He's just left this area to get away from all the baloney of all of the religiosity of all the people that are there. And he hears someone crying out over and over, just pleading for him. And what a contrast to all the people that have been telling him what he can't do, to hear this woman who believes so devoutly in what he can do. And he waits for God's people to respond. And it makes me wonder how much he's waiting to hear God's people respond today. And how much he hears and is brokenhearted to hear them say, they don't belong here. You need to send them away. And what joy must have left his mind and his heart when he hears from his very own people, you can't do that. You can't do that. And he's sick of man telling him what he can't do. But we do a pretty good job of it, don't we? And this woman is such a contrast to his disciples. I mean, she comes to Jesus believing, sort of like the child that believes that their parents can fix anything with just a kiss on that scraped knee or on that boo-boo of life and make it all okay. That's this woman, and then there's his followers, and he must have been overjoyed what's happening until he hears his followers respond. They followed him. They've watched him. They've seen him touch the leper and heal the broken and the blind, and say that if anyone is weary and burdened, come to me and I'll give you rest. They've heard all of it, and he waits to see how those who follow him are going to reach out and provide the care that is needed, and see how they are going to treat people. And as he waits, he hears this woman and his disciples say, "Send her away." So this little girl, she's possessed by a demon, and they want to send her away. And I think there's this aspect of God that he knows it's a struggle for us. He knows it's a struggle for his church, because all of us can get this idea that these people don't belong here. I mean, these sinners don't belong here. And the massive thing that we're missing when we think of anyone that doesn't belong here is we're missing that neither do we. Years ago, before I was in ministry, I worked in the aviation industry, and I remember having a prayer friend of mine, and at break times and lunches and things, we had identified people in co-workers and things that we were going to be praying for, to give their lives to Christ, that we knew weren't a part of knowing Jesus. And so we prayed about a young lady. She had pretty rough experiences of life and wasn't anywhere near God at all. And so we decided, we'd been praying for a few weeks, that we're going to pray for Bobby, was her name. And we're going to pray for her to open that door for us to talk to her about Jesus. And we decide, okay, here, you know, today we're going to do that. And so we're getting ready to talk to her about Jesus, and when she comes up, and all of that looked pretty good, except Al walks up right when we're getting ready to talk to her about Jesus. Now, Al's pretty rough. I mean, his vocabulary is not much more than four letters long in any way, sense, or the shape, or form, and I mean, it's pretty rough. That's just Al, and so it's like, well, great. You know, here it's blown. We've been praying for Bobby all this time. We wanted to talk to Bobby about Jesus, and here Al blows it. And then my buddy Bob Bobby walks away. Just even ruins it more, right? But here's Al, my mind, tattoos everywhere. I mean, he's just all over the place. And this is back in the 80s, you know, when it was a little less common. And I had my judgment meter up on Al. And so Bobby walks away. So my buddy Bob, he turns to Al, and he says, "So Al, you ever thought about giving your life to Jesus?" I'm like, "Are you serious? Have you got it?" I don't even know how he's going to answer this without using four letters, Bob. I mean, come on. And you know, Al's demeanor changed. And he said, "You know, I've been thinking about that." Oh, my. I missed that one. Because that's the way we can be as God's people, right? This is who deserves mercy. And this is who isn't capable of receiving it, because they don't deserve it. And all the while, what's the dilemma that we're looking for in there, is that we don't, any of us, deserve God's mercy. Because if we did, it would no longer be mercy. She hears these followers and their words, and I just have to think that her hope must have just drained from her life. And what happens when you're in the rope and the rope just kind of unravels a little bit? I'll try one last try with my husband or wife. I'll try one last time, but it fails. I'll try one last doctor, one last counselor, one last reach out to a child, one last church, one last hope. in waiting for God's mercy can feel like you can't make it another day. But this woman didn't come to one last doctor or counselor or church. She came to who? She came to the Son of God. And when God waits in your life, it's not out of cruelty. He waits for us to be ready to listen. And sometimes He waits for others to be ready to listen. But make no mistake, even when you don't hear His answer, even when God waits, don't miss that He is listening. He sent His Word for us to read. He sent His Son for us to be saved. And He allows these challenges into our lives so that we can know His mercy. And when verse 25 said, the woman came and knelt before Him, "Lord, help me," she said. In the Bible, book of Mark, it says she fell at His feet and she begged Him, "Lord, help me." She didn't know what else to say. The Bible, book of Romans, in 8:26, it says, "In the same way the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us through wordless groans." Lord, help me. I don't know what else to do. But it says the Holy Spirit intercedes, and that Lord, help me, He translates that into exactly what we need, into that exactly situation, into our lives. And we don't know what it is. And Jesus replies to her this really awkward statement to me. He says, it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. That just seems a little odd. I don't know. Jesus has some things that He does time to time that just don't quite connect for me, and it sounds a bit cruel. But anytime Jesus asks a question or He makes a statement, it's never for His benefit. It's always for ours. It's always for hers. It's always for His followers. And maybe this is one of those times I have to think. It's not right to take the children's bread and just throw it on the ground. Maybe it's that Romans 3:10 statement that it says in Romans 3:10 that there's no one righteous, not even one. And he's telling her, you know, nobody deserves children's bread. Maybe it's a statement He's making to her. Maybe it's a statement He's making to His disciples. Again, for them to hear. And we don't deserve it. He's right. I don't. This woman says, he says, woman, you don't deserve it. It's not right to take the children's bread. And she says, I know. But even the dogs get crumbs. I know I don't deserve it, God, but could I please just have a crumb? Just a crumb. There's not a lot of pride in asking for crumbs, is there? Often we have to fall down before we will let Him pick us up. It's often when we're under the table of life and we're just longing for a crumb at the Master's table that we realize that a crumb from Jesus is enough. We don't need the grand things of life. We just need the crumbs from the Master. Psalms 145:14, it says, "The Lord upholds all who fall and lifts up all who are bowed down." Jesus responds to the woman in Matthew 15:28. He says to her, because she says, but even the crumbs. He says in 15:28, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed at that moment. Why? Because she believed even a crumb was enough. Your daughter is healed. I mean, there's peace in that for her. I just wonder how long she stayed on her knees and wept when she heard the words. of His grace and mercy and love. Some of us need those words today, probably. You might be sitting here and that resonates with you. You've been searching for crumbs. Maybe you've searched in all the wrong places. In relationships, in the things of just this world, or just the struggles of life. But she believed, and her daughter was healed. And it tells me that if you're watching, you know, if we're here in the room or watching online, some of us are probably just longing for that crumb. So what can we learn from this woman real quick, and then we'll be done? One thing we can learn is she came to Jesus. She came to Jesus even when the world said she didn't deserve it. Come to Jesus even when the world, or let me rephrase that, even when God's people say you don't deserve it. Come to Jesus even when somebody says you don't deserve it. Now, second, she waited beyond His silence. She waited. Maybe you've been waiting in life and the silence is just killing you. I want to just encourage you to wait. Wait for God and realize that His silence so often is when He speaks the loudest, if we will listen. Third, she believed a crumb was enough. Jesus says that I am the bread of life. You know, it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Jesus is the bread of life. And if He's the bread of life, then surely a crumb is enough. Believe that any portion of Jesus is more than you will ever need. And the last thing that comes out is, to my mind, is bow before the one who offers far more than crumbs. It's humbling ourselves. It's coming to Jesus and just bowing before Him and allowing Him to answer when He knows it is best. And it is never easy, but it is always worth it. And I think perhaps we can learn something from our little dogs that sit under the table at every meal, patiently waiting for a crumb with no doubt in their mind it's eventually going to come. They don't give up, do they? They do not give up. I wonder sometimes if maybe God doesn't put them there just for us to learn. Because there's simple faith in the Master from them, isn't there? That one day they're going to drop a crumb. You see, the greatest mercy that we may have received may not be the gift of life of a loved one healed, or the hardship of life's all taken away. Sometimes the greatest gift of mercy is just to sit under the table of the Master and to find that He has enough strength for you to make it through. Mercy starts when we find Jesus at the cross. And I just want to encourage you today that if you need that mercy, I'm sure there'd be those here that would be happy to talk and pray with you and share with you in your life and what you do need. But I want to pray with us today and then I'll be done. Lord, just thank You for who You are. I pray for You, Lord, that we encounter You in odd ways in Your stories of how You engage us. But really, you do engage us in ways that we don't always understand, but ways that we always need. And I pray, Father, that You would help us. Help us to set under the table of the Master and allow You to speak into our lives. If there's anyone here right now, Lord, that needs Your mercy in their life, that needs just a crumb of Your grace, Lord, I pray that You would drop that into their life, that You would open their heart, that they would be able to hear You, and that You would speak into their life to bring the encouragement and the hope and the strength that they need to make it through. I pray, Lord, that if anyone doesn't know You, that they don't know you as Lord as this woman knew you, that they would know you and that they would take that first step of accepting you and making you their Lord and Savior. Lord, I thank you for allowing us to be your people, and I pray that we would not be the ones that say, send them away, but we would be the ones that say, go in peace. And Lord, I just thank you for this day and ask all this in your name. Amen.